Hello, this is Rabble Radio, recorded on Friday, February 6, 2026. I'm your host, Breanne Doyle. Rabble.ca shares with you the news of the day through a progressive lens. If you're curious about what's happening in Canadian politics, labor, the environment, and beyond, you've come to the right place. This is news for the rest of us. Thanks for tuning in. . 2026 marks the 60th anniversary of Canada's Seasonal Agricultural Worker Program. Today, at a time when Canada appears to be rolling back protections and freedoms for migrant workers, this anniversary raises an urgent question. What does Canada's treatment of migrants reveal about our values, and are we truly living up to the United Nations expectations for human rights? Gabriel Aladua from Justice for Migrant Workers sits down with Gabriella Kaluge-Kasuga to talk about the urgent need to speak up for migrant workers in Canada and globally. Here are Gabby and Gabriel in conversation. Take a listen.
Hello, Gabriel. Thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today.
Thank you so much for this wonderful opportunity. And special greetings to everyone in Radioland. My name is Gabriel. I'm from a tiny Caribbean island named St. Lucia. I came to Canada in 2012 as a migrant farm worker. This year, 2026, marks the 60th anniversary of the Seasonal Agricultural Workers Program. That's a program that brought me to Canada. This year, 2026, marks 10 years, one decade of my activism and role in advocacy to fight for migrant justice in Canada.
Now, what are some of the big challenges for immigrants and specifically migrant workers here in Canada, you know, as we come into 2026?
Okay, the environment is getting increasingly unfriendly. And it's like they're taking the cue from south of the border. And what do I mean by that? The government policies are getting very, very tough and very, very unfriendly. And that is creating a lot of instability and really putting people, migrant workers, in a very difficult situation. And the numbers are very, very disturbing. Canada is cutting. And when migrant workers made a decision to come here, they came here on a promise. If you take international students, for example, what was the promise? Come, study, work, explore, stay. They came on the promise that they can stay. But now, halfway through the program, Canada is changing the rules. So the environment is getting very, very, very unfriendly. And when it comes to international students, as just one example, we're not talking about 10, 20,000, hundreds of thousands of international students. So the numbers are very, very, very disturbing.
Yeah, I was wondering if you could elaborate on kind of what impact this will have on workers who have immigrated here, who are now having the rules changed on them.
Yeah, it will impact them in so many ways. When you have those conditions, for example, with I heard today that Bill C-12 will be adopted or is adopted. And when you have a bill that empowers people to even withdraw your application for permanent residence, when you have a bill that empowers the authorities to basically, I would say, to trample over migrant workers, that is very, very, very disturbing. And that is not the kind of Canada that we know. But Europe, USA, Canada, North America is very, very anti-immigrant. And we know south of the border, the kind of rhetoric that's coming there is really fueling the fun, the fire. And it is really, really anti-immigrant. And it is really destabilizing people. And who are migrants? Migrants are coming there not freely because of difficult neoliberal policies in their home countries that creates high unemployment. They come here for better, to basically provide for their families. I'm thinking that they're coming to greener pastures where, you know, the conditions are better. And in especially they choose Canada. Why? We hear the challenges in the US, but we don't hear the troubles in Canada because Canada has a culture of silence. But in our home countries, No news is good news. So we don't have the troubles in Canada. So we think we come into a better place when by choosing Canada. Only to find out, or only when you get it, to find out those policies are really unfriendly and they destabilize you. They prevent you from supporting your families and basically keeping you in a situation that is vulnerable, that you forces you to be submissive, forces you to be compliant, and now it is taking away whatever little avenue you have to live here, and not just live here. It's also an opportunity for you to access rights by applying for status in Canada. Not just the opportunity to live here, but it also gives you the opportunity to access rights, because in Canada, everything can be accessed. But with status. If you have status, you can access healthcare. If you have status, you can access this. If you have status, you can access that. And this opportunity is being taken away. And I'm just saying it's difficult conditions for people and really in real instability.
You mentioned something that I think is very important as well, is that people are coming here not completely freely, but out of necessity to support their families because of policies back home that might cause high unemployment and things like that. So when this avenue to come here to support your families or to stay here and support your families are taken away, what impact does that have on, a worker and their family back home?
Let me put it this way. Jamaica, I'll use Jamaica as an example. Jamaica is well known for tourism. Lots of tourists go to Jamaica. It's cheaper, it's closer, and so on. But I was surprised when I heard remittances from migrant workers to Jamaica, it accounts more to the GDP than the net effects of tourism in Jamaica. What does remittances mean? Remittances from migrant workers, what does it mean? One, it provides money for schooling, for education of the children and their families back home. Two, support, medical support for their families. Three, food. Four, utilities and the daily expenses. Four, shelter. And five, like in Jamaica, we had a hurricane, a super hurricane recently. In the Philippines, we had a super typhoon, and to provide those cushion for families back home. When those remittances are no longer available, what does that mean? Usually a migrant worker coming to Canada is a breadwinner for the family, a breadwinner. So when that breadwinner is taken away from the family, what do we have? What is resulting? What do we have resulting? One, the breadwinner, by losing a breadwinner through difficult policies in Canada, it means that the family, the writing is on the wall for the family. No money to buy food, for schooling, for education, for healthcare, and so on for the family. So what does that mean? That's a recipe for poverty. That's a recipe for family instability. And what does that mean? It just drives you further into the grounds of the grounds of poverty. And that's what it is. That's what it is. That the country that you saw as an opportunity for a way out for your family, a better life for your family, is taking that away from your family and basically drives you straight into poverty. And that is a very, very a difficult tablet, a very difficult pill. That's a very difficult thing to bite.
I wanted to shift the conversation because we've kind of been talking about this a little bit about, the growing anti-immigrant sentiment, and especially the situation happening in the United States, with, increasing violence and repression against migrants. I guess my first question is pretty broad, which is just like, what is your reaction to seeing all this news come out about this anti-migrant and this sentiment and this violence?
My initial reaction is, I don't know. It is based on race. It's people from the global south that are affected the most. They are the ones carrying the country. They are the ones doing the dirty work, the difficult, dangerous, deadly, dehumanizing work. They are the ones carrying the country, and they are the ones impacted the most. That's one. Number two, you can see a lot of funding goes into policing and border control and so on. A lot of money, a lot of resources goes into that, rather than resources going to support the people who are vulnerable and marginalized or create better standards of living. The resources are placed into policing the borders and so on, and that is very, very, very disturbing. So a lot of resources is directed towards the border, control the border, control the border. And it is based on race, and that is very, very disturbing. If you look at Canada, A lot. I would say it feels like unlimited resources is directed to the CBSE. Unlimited resources, and not just money and that kind of resources, and not only money, but also in terms of recruitment. They've recruited 1,000 more people. Not only that, the powers, the kind of powers that they have, at least I call it unlimited powers. So that is extremely disturbing. And who is Canada? When I say who is Canada, compared to the US, we are underpopulated. We are underpopulated. So what was the first? But yet still, we cannot talk about that without bringing Ukraine in the conversation. Canada is telling people from Ukraine, any amount, come, 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 any amount, any amount. And it is well known that over 300,000 people from Ukraine were welcome and they fitted nicely. They never caused problems to the housing crisis or the high cost of. No, they fitted in nicely. No comments about that. But when it comes to migrant workers during the election, after the election, they are the ones that have been scapegoated and blamed for the high cost of housing, all the problems. But the 300,000 plus Ukrainians, they fitted in nicely. No problem, no headaches with that. And that people need to be aware of that and to be awakened to that, because migrants, they do not have a voice, so it's easy to blame them. It's very, very easy to blame them. And look at that again. So much money in Canada, if you look at the last budget, so much money is directed towards, they call it national security, and I call it war. And the civil service, the public servants, the public services, a lot of cutting, cutbacks, cutbacks, cutbacks in essential services. And where is that resources? Where is that money being placed into, I call it war, they call it national security. So these are very, very important. It's not a case where Canada don't have the resources, but the question is where they put in the resources, what becomes the priority. And what the politicians are happy to tell me, this is not an issue in the riding. This is not an issue. So if we're not aware of it, you don't call your MPs, your MPPs, and so on. They're happy with that because that's not an issue. And what do they like? When we are quiet about things, our silence. Our silence is very powerful. That's what they like. Our silence. On whose side is our silence? Never the side of the tormented. It's always on the side of the tormentor. So we need to wake up to that and speak up, because Canada has a culture of silence, and we need to break that silence, because if you keep quiet, you're just supporting the status quo.
Yeah, and that kind of reminds me of something you said earlier in this interview where you mentioned that people sometimes come to Canada because they don't hear as much bad news coming out of Canada in relation to migrant rights and things like that, because it's kind of quieter, I guess. How can we, really raise awareness about that? What are some of the things that people should, really be talking about?
How can we raise awareness? There are lots, multiple ways. I would say 101 ways that we can do that. 101. Actually, let me start with this. We are in the age of information, information age. Too much, maybe too much information. We're in the age of information. But the question is, where is our information coming from? Is it coming from mainstream media? Is it coming from the source of our information? Is it watered down and sugar-coated? Or is it, where is it coming from? Or is it coming straight from the horse's mouth? Where are we getting our information? Who controls mainstream media? Why are we doing this today? It's because mainstream media does not focus on their agenda is very much controlled by those who have the people with the money, the power, and the influence. So, where is our information coming from? How can we raise awareness? There's 101 ways. This radio interview here is one opportunity to get it from the horse's mouth. That is one. Many people have written about it, articles, books. There are lots of documentaries. There's so many ways. There's 101 ways that we can raise awareness. 101 ways. There's so many groups that are raising awareness and fighting back, are pushing back and fighting back. There are lots of groups. So lots of people, lots of things that happen right in our community. So we just need to tap in. As I said, if you take books, for example, if you look at my book, for example, Harvesting Freedom, is the 60th anniversary of the farm program. And they said that's the first time a migrant worker has published his story. So why Why don't people talk about it? Why are they not able to write their stories? It's because of oppressive laws and difficult conditions. So I want the listening public to know that there are lots of articles, lots of academic journals, professors have written about. There are endless sources of information that these stories, they are not new to Canada. In 60 years, these are not new. They are well documented, and it's a powerful document. I would like to introduce it by saying DET. DET, denied, excluded, and tied. That's the arrangement Canada have for migrant workers. Deny them, exclude them, and tie them. Deny them rights, exclude them from freedom, and tie them to the employer. That arrangement, the UN rapporteur concluded that arrangement is the breeding ground for contemporary forms of slavery. So these stories are well documented in so many places. How do we raise awareness? It's not by listening to mainstream media, but by digging for the information. If they're available, there's so much information. Digging for it is one. Searching for the groups or the people that are fighting for it. They're right there. They're powerless. They're not always in mainstream media. They're always on the at the bottom, in the margins, fighting. So they are there, but search for them. They're right there.
And you brought up a good point. You mentioned the UN Special Rapporteur talking about contemporary slavery in the Temporary Foreign Worker Program. There's also recently been a new submission to the UN Human Rights Committee from the Canadian Council for Refugees that says Canada is at risk of backsliding on its human rights commitments. I'm curious, how do you see Canada's ability to respect the human rights of migrants in this time?
The ability. Okay, first of all, I would like to say many, many years. I always wondered why Canada, whenever they were running for positions on certain committees at the UN, they were struggling. They were struggling behind certain countries in Europe, like maybe Sweden, Switzerland, or so on. They were always struggling behind those countries. They were always struggling. On the world stage, I always had the impression Canada has a good image, a champion for human rights, a safe haven for people in difficult situations. But why do they have to struggle? Only when I come in and when I arrive here, I'm discovering and up to now I'm learning about Canada's role. Canada have policies that Canada is very, very, very consistent. If you tell me a year, I'll tell you a program. Canada consistently have programs that dehumanize and exploit people. Canada is very, very, very consistent with that. That's one. Number two, in 1982, that's not 20 years ago, that's not 40 years ago, over 40 years ago, Canada implemented the Charter of Rights and Freedom, the Charter of Rights and Freedom. What is Canada saying? Everybody who comes to Canada, everybody who live in Canada have rights, have freedom. It's like we are going to our grandmother's house. Everybody in the family, every member of the family have rights to that house, have freedom in that house. That's what Canada is saying. Look at the policies. Look at the policies. By denying migrant workers, excluding them, and tying them to the employer, they are preventing migrant workers from accessing those rights. And what is Canada doing about it? They always react, and in whose favor do they react? Always in favor of the employer. Canada is falling short. If you take an example here, Canada's reaction to the UN Rapporteur's report, what is their reaction? That they will to go with full speed to implement a sectoral work permit. Sectoral work permit. What is that? Instead of a worker being tied to one employer, they will be tied to a sector. And what is that sector? Fishing and agriculture will be combined. But these two sectors, fishing and agriculture, these two sectors have insufficient regulatory protections. They don't have a lot of protections for workers. But to the public, they will tell the public, workers can freely change employers. That sounds nice. Freely change employers, it sounds nice on paper, but in practice, it's not working as nicely as that. And even though it works out nicely, when you can freely change employees in sectors that does not have protection, what is that? What is that? So Canada is failing to provide adequate protection. And there's so many UN conventions that Canada is falling short on. Canada is, for example, the UN Convention on the rights of migrants and their families. Canada haven't signed it, haven't ratified it, haven't implemented it. So Canada is falling short and well short of that. Not too long ago, a couple of years ago, I was at the UN when Canada was providing midway report about the 17 SDGs, Sustainable Development Goals. Canada is reporting on it, and Canada is saying that they are on track. How can they on track? Number one is saying no poverty. Number two, zero hunger. Number eight is saying decent work. Where is Canada on that? Where is Canada? And they're saying that they're on track to meeting those sustainable development goals. Canada is falling short. And we need to wake up and call Canada for what it is. Because if we are quiet, our silence is only suggesting we agree with what's happening. We need to wake up, become aware of the issues, and call Canada for what it is.
You make a really good point there. You know, people are very much focused on, you know, the anti-immigrant violence happening south of the border, but just because it's not as boldly in the open in Canada does not mean it's not occurring here as well. And I think you raise a really good point that we should all be fighting back. What would you want to see in terms of, you know, people coming together to fight back?
What I would like to see, I would like to see a loud and united force. What do I mean by a loud and united force? The more people become unionized, it means more decent working conditions, unionized. So I want the unions to be involved, loud and clear that, to fight for the unionization of those people. That's one, unions. What I would like to see, that regardless of the language that we speak, for example, on the farm where I work, there were people from Guatemala, Latinos, Barbados, Barbados, Jamaica, St. Lucia. We all have different culture, and it's difficult for us to unite. That is what Canada is. Canada is very diverse, multicultural, and so on. Despite of your language, culture, and so on, we all are united by injustice. So we need to unite and stand up to fight back, because slowly Canada is pushing for policies that would weaken us. The freedom of speech, freedom of association, Canada wants to roll that back slowly. And we need to stand up and protect. Because what they say, the things we fought for, the things that we fought really, really hard to gain, the gains that we've made, we have to fight even harder to keep them. And I'm telling you, we are in the times when all of those gains that we've had, we need to fight harder to keep them. Otherwise, slowly we'll see these gains being eroded and we'll be back to square one. So people need to wake up and push together. I might have a big mouth or a long mouth, but I'm only that one person. But collectively, we are a force. Because what the politicians do not want to see, we workers stand united. That is the day politicians would really wake up and take action.
Gabriel, thank you so much for joining us on Rabble Radio today.
Thank you for this wonderful opportunity. And to each and everybody, there's power in your hands. There is power in your hands as a consumer. There's power in your hands as a voter. There's power in your hands because you have a skill, you have a talent. What is that skill you have? What is that talent that you have? Use it, wake up, connect to it, and use it to create a better world, a just world. There's sufficient resources in Canada for everybody to live a dignified life. But there's not enough for 1% of the population of Canada. There's never enough for that 1%. We need to wake up and create a fair and a just society.
That was Rabble Labour reporter Gabriela Kaluge-Kasuga and Gabriel Aladua with Justice for Migrant Workers. Thanks so much for that, Gabby and Gabriel. And now, this is our In Case You Missed It segment, where we review the top stories from this week on Rabble.ca. Here is Rabble editor Nick Seabrook. Take it away, Nick.
Thanks, Brianne. Starting this week with labor news. Unifor and the Canadian Labor Congress are calling on the federal government to provide concrete supports for those in the automotive industry. The industry is one of the hardest hit by U.S. President Donald Trump's tariffs, and concerns raised last month after Prime Minister Mark Carney reached a deal with China to allow more electric vehicles from that country to enter the Canadian market. The federal government has pledged to invest $3 billion in the auto sector, as well as putting counter-tariffs on American vehicles. Lana Payne, president of Unifor, said that there was still more the government could do to protect Canadian auto workers, saying, quote, "The bottom line for all automakers must be if they want to sell in Canada, they have to build and invest in Canada. The free ride must end for companies that take from Canada's $100 billion sales market while giving nothing back." End quote. Staying with labor news, 2026 is likely to be a year of upheaval for the labor movement, says Rabble columnist Tom Sanborn. Not only are tough economic times creating pressures on the labor market, but several major unions across Canada will be negotiating new collective agreements with their employers this year. One such union are customer service workers with Air Canada, who are represented by the Canadian Union of Public Employees. That union will be holding a strike vote later this month. Likewise, Air Canada machinists, represented by the International Association of Machinists and Aerospace Workers, will see their contract come up for renegotiation in March. Later in the spring, transit workers in BC and Saskatchewan will also see their contracts coming up for renegotiation. These are just a few examples of many other instances where labor disputes could be possible this year. The economic pressures of tariffs could lead to tense negotiations, which in turn could lead to strikes and lockouts. And finally, in health news, the Ontario Council of Hospital Unions is warning that Ontario Premier Doug Ford is creating a two-tiered healthcare system in the province. Doug Ford is using taxpayer money to fund medical procedures at private clinics. These procedures are considered routine, but often include strategies to upsell patients on more expensive options, leading them to pay more out of pocket. Additionally, these private clinics are often located in more affluent areas and tend to see patients who are able to pay more treated before those who pay less. The Ontario Council of Hospital Unions says that this money should be going to the public healthcare system, where it can be used to help all Ontarians, not just the wealthy. And as always, you can read the full version of all the stories we talked about today on Rabble.ca.
Thanks, Nick. And that's it for Rabble Radio this week. Thanks as always for tuning in. If you like the show, please consider subscribing to Rabble Radio on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you get your podcasts. And please rate, review, share Rabble Radio with your friends. It takes 2 seconds to support independent media like Rabble. If you have feedback for the show, ideas, stories, opinions you'd like us to cover, we'd love to hear about it. Get in touch with us anytime at editor@rabble.ca. Thank you to all the journalists and writers who contributed to this week's content on rabble.ca, and thank you to Carl Nirenberg for supplying the music. Lastly, thank you to you for tuning in to Rabble Radio. I'm Brianne Doyle, and I'll talk to you next week.